Welcome back to Apocalypse Radio with me, Andrew Lewis, your host. Also, we'll talk about the Hemingway list, but mostly the apocalypse. Day 5 of my isolation diary. Day 5? Is it really day 5? Or day 4? I'm either 4 or 5 days into it and I've already lost track of the days. Oh my god, I'm useless in an apocalypse. Today's episode is brought to you by Apocalypse Beer. Delicious, refreshing. It's not the apocalypse. I shouldn't say that. That's what I shouldn't do. But I am drinking a beer. I'm not drunk. I've only had one sip. If you're thinking, geez, he sounds drunk. I'm just in a funny mood because of isolation. Today, I spilled my beer. And I drank it off the table. I'm not sure that I'm not drunk. I mean, I've only had one sip, but that was a weird thing to do. Oh my god. Today I wrote a little bit more of Bogan War and Peace. That was fun. Did a little bit more of my collaborative novel. One of my students and I, Aaron, who he's 15, and he's one of my students. And he is a published author as well. He's written a book. We both really love Terry Pratchett. And we really love Good Omens, the book that Terry Pratchett collaborated with Neil Gaiman. And they wrote this book together. So we had this idea a little while back to collaborate on a novel together. And then he's just... yesterday was his last... Or the day before yesterday was his last day of school. They've gone into shutdown mode. So he's home. I'm in isolation, so we thought, what better time to maybe kick that project off and start writing this collaborative novel? And so we're 2 chapters in already, and it's really fun to collaborate. We're still figuring out the best way to do it. Chapter 1, what we both did is we talked about what the chapter's about, who's in it, what happens, what's the point of the chapter, and then we both went off and independently wrote the chapter. We agreed upon sort of a style. You know, third person, past tense narrative in the style of Terry Pratchett and Roald Dahl. And then so that we were both kind of approximating the same style. So we both wrote our chapters independently and we found that we both wrote really similar things. It was eerie the way that some of the coincidences that we hadn't discussed that were in there. Some really strange things. But then we smooshed them together, ironed out the kinks, and it actually worked really well. So that's what we did for chapter 1. Chapter 2, we thought we'd try it a different way, just so we can say we've tried different methods and figure out which one works best at the early stages in the novel. And what we did this time was I wrote 500 words and then said, all right, that's the first 500 words of chapter 2. Now you read that and kick off from there and continue. That didn't work as well because it turns out that at the same time he went ahead and wrote chapter 2, and we hadn't discussed as much who was in it and what happens, only kind of a vaguer, idea. So that one took a bit more smooshing together. It still worked really well and the chapter came out really good, but we're finding our collaborative style, but that's been keeping us entertained and it's really fun. Excuse me. And the book is really funny. I've got hiccups from this beer. Oh, it's really good. Really good beer. So that's fun. That's my silver lining for this. I've also played so much bass guitar today that my fingers have developed a blister on the end of my fingertips, which is annoying because I really want to play a lot of bass, which I did. But now that means my fingers are going to hurt while I continue to play bass. Whatever. I might do that old trick. An old bass player's trick is to put super glue on the fingertips, on your fingertips, so that they don't blister as easily. I bought a new bass a few days ago, like maybe a week ago, and I really love it. I really love it. It's on my Instagram. It's a 1976-ish Fresher, which is a Japanese ripoff of Fender. Personal Bass, which is a Japanese, their ripoff of the Precision Bass, It's almost an exact replica of a Fender Precision Bass made in the 70s by this Japanese company. It's where they made a lot of really good guitars and bass guitars back then. And in the same factory, they also just made these ripoff instruments and put them under these various different names. Some of those names still exist today, like Tokai. Tokai? They got their start in being a Fender ripoff brand. But they actually did a really good job of ripping off these Fenders back in the 70s until they got the pants sued off them, and then they no longer do that. But if you can kind of get one from back then, they're really beautiful, kind of vintagey instruments. Mine's got all kind of aged gloss on the neck, and so it's got that nice amber tone with little imperfections in it just from the years, like little cracks in the gloss, and it just looks absolutely beautiful. And like wear marks on the fretboard from where the strings have been hitting the fretboard for over, 40 years or whatever. Anyway, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I put a photo of it on my Instagram, @AndaLewis, if you want to have a look at that. But I panic bought that, kind of. I'd been planning to buy a bass guitar for a long time, right? And this one just kind of, I don't know, it was an impulse buy. Probably a silly one, but I'm also kind of glad that I made this silly impulse buy, because it's keeping me very entertained during this apocalypse. Sorry. Starting off the episode with a complete sidetrack rant. I know some people don't like that. They just want to hear about the books. Fair enough. Another sidetrack rant, though, before I get started. It's only take a second. Today I stumbled upon a guy who is a Twitch streamer of reading classic novels. Which I have thought about before, way back when I started this podcast. I thought, maybe I should live stream the readings. It would be really easy for me to just go online on Twitch and maybe have a bit of a muck around with whoever's watching, a bit of Q&A or just, chit-chat hosting the show, and then hit record, do the episode, and then finish recording, and so sort of have a little bit of a time before and after the podcast, but live stream the making of the podcast. It's an idea. I kind of don't want a new project, but if it's easy, if it's just something you go online and, go on, I'll do it. I don't really know much about Twitch. I understand it's actually not that easy, though. And the other thing is if people actually want me to do it. So that's what I'm asking. Would you guys tune in and watch live the recording of the podcast? You'd be able to interact with the recording of the podcast live, which could be cool. Because then as we have the conversation about the chapter, I would be basing it off the Reddit thread, but also you could jump in live and have your input. Let me know what you think of that idea. Chapter 7 of The American. Why is Newman spending so much time with Monsieur Bellegarde? And what was the purpose of their visit to the Italian lady? Swim said the mama fishy said, because Newman is in love with his sister. That's why he's hanging out with him, just to get to his sister. Could be right. And question two, Bellegarde's purpose is to watch her descent into prostitution for his own amusement. Yeah, that's kind of what I figured, but Jesus, what the hell? For those who went to American high school, remember those 5-paragraph essays where you had to compare and contrast something the class was currently studying? Do high schools even do this anymore? I could write a killer essay about Old World versus New World on this chapter alone. James certainly brought out his sledgehammer and beat us over the head with it regarding this subject. Sluggy, with 3 G's, said, he was definitely not being subtle with the old, new versus old world metaphor in this chapter, but I did enjoy some of his descriptions. I think my favourite was when he was talking about Bellegarde's education and noted that his instructors had not succeeded in mounting him upon stilts. I definitely remember... I'm going to sneeze in a second. I definitely remember the paragraph... the five-paragraph essays with the topic sentence. Oh! That felt good. Excuse me. I definitely remember the five-paragraph essays with the topic sentence, although this was 20 years ago now, so I have no idea what they are doing these days. I didn't go to an American high school, but we did... No, we didn't do five-paragraph essays. Not that I remember. And I don't really know what this old versus new world thing is, exactly. Unless you're just saying, basically, the way things used to be versus the way things are today. Oh, beer's good. Simply Productive said, because... question one. Because they're going to be BFFs for EVA Love Heart, Love Heart, Love Heart emoji. Yeah, I think you're right. I think these two are going to be best of buddies. Question two. The brother wants to see her become a prostitute, but Newman wants to help her. Yeah, I think Newman's a bit of a bleeding heart, isn't he? He wants to rescue everyone and help everyone's cause. I'm kind of torn about portraying an abuse victim as silly. I'm sure it can be true, but honestly, anyone who can get themselves out of that situation, and especially when women still have no rights, in my view, is probably not so silly at all. Maybe I'm still emotionally stunted or deeply traumatized, resulting in a little emotional immaturity. Maybe you could call that silly. Am I being a prick about this? I don't know. Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? I mean, it's mean to say they're silly. It's mean. And it's also probably not at all under their control if they've been oppressed and abused and traumatized and have very little options and very little rights. It's probably not on them that they're having to make this bad life decision. Saying that, they probably are quite silly. Just by sort of... by no fault of their own. And, I don't know. You gotta call a spade sometimes, right? Where did I put my tissue? I had a tissue. I don't want to get another tissue because I feel like every time I use a tissue... I'm spending $5.80. Tell you what, hell of a time to be a hay fevery person. You do not want to be the guy that's sneezing in public. Or sniffling or whatever. I'm not coronavirus, as far as I know. I might be, but I don't think I am. I don't even feel sick remotely. I just have hay fevery symptoms, which I always have every day, all the time. Just to say that. Not that you can catch coronavirus via a microphone podcast. Are we being pricks about this? Yes. I think she's probably a silly girl. I think she's probably a big dum-dum. A big old dum-dum. And maybe she is just choosing the path of least resistance. Maybe she does have options, but is just, I don't know, doing what's easy. I don't know. Either way, I feel bad for this person, but sometimes these people who do these things kind of prey on you feeling bad for them and rely on it. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Tough love can actually be the thing that these people need to say, you know, get your head out of the sand, pull your finger out, and don't be a hooker. Sluggy with 3G says, well, that sent me down a really interesting rabbit hole. Apparently, the meaning of the word silly has changed a lot throughout its history, originally deriving from the word meaning blessed or fortunate, then came to mean pitiful or helpless, then to mean ignorant or stupid, and finally to mean absurd or ridiculous. Interesting read. Huh, wow. What a roundabout kind of thing to come from fortunate or blessed to absurd and ridiculous. I think Belgarde is using it derisively here to call her ignorant, and it emphasizes his callousness and cruelty. I think you're definitely right. I don't think he's saying that she's blessed or fortunate. Plus, it's not that long ago. You know, late 1800s, it's the world wasn't that different then, other than technologically. But, you know, it's really funny to see that people had basically the same senses of humor that we have now, and the same witticisms, and language was much the same. It's really, I don't know. You feel like things should be older back then, but they're really not. Like reading War and Peace, set in the early 1800s, and there's scenes where they like check their watch, and it's like their watch, they just have like a wristwatch on. It's 220 years ago, you know? But yeah, I don't know. And like drinking a cup of coffee or these kinds of things, which just, I don't know, I mean, I know coffee's been around for a long time, but it just makes me, I kept being like, oh, they had that back then? Okay. All right. That's the conversation done. We have traveled wearily along Conversation Street and arrived at our destination, Reading Avenue. What book are we reading? That one. The American by... Oh, I need another tissue. Guys, if you don't already sponsor the podcast by Patreon, now's the time. Toss a coin to your reader. Oh, Valley of Plenty. Because I'm going through tissues at an alarming rate. And I fear for what's to come in my near future. Let me just say that. I'll just say I'm glad my bathroom, my shower, is close to my toilet. Chapter 8 goes like this. Tell me something about your sister, Newman began abruptly. Belgarde turned and gave him a quick look. Now that I think of it, you have never asked me that question about her. I know that very well. If it is because you don't trust me, you are very right, said Belgarde. I can't talk of her rationally. I admire her too much. Talk of her as you can, rejoined Newman. Let yourself go. Well, we are very good friends. We are such a brother and sister as have not been since Orestes and Electra. You have seen her. You know what she is. Tall, thin, light, imposing and gentle. Half a grand dame and half an angel. A mixture of pride and humility, of the eagle and the dove. She looks like a statue which had failed as stone, resigned itself to its grave defects, and come to life as flesh and blood to wear white capes and long trains. Oh, what a sentence. All I can say is that she really possesses every merit that her face, her glance, her smile, the tone of her voice led you to expect. It is saying a great deal. As a general thing, when a woman seems very charming, I should say beware, but in proportion as Claire seems charming, you may fold your arms and let yourself float with the current. You are safe. She is so good. I have never seen a woman half so perfect or so complete. She has everything. That is all I can say about her. There, Belgarde concluded. I told you I should rhapsodize. Newman was silent a while, as if he were turning over his companion's words. She is very good, hey? He repeated at last. Rhapsodize, what a word. I'm going to write that down. Excuse me a moment. Rhapsodize. Beautiful. Divinely good. Kind, charitable, generous, gentle. Generosity itself, kindness double distilled. Is she clever? She is the most intelligent woman I know. Try her some day with something difficult, and you will see. Is she fond of admiration? Parbleu, cried Belgarde, what woman is not? Ah, when they are too fond of admiration, they commit all kinds of follies to get it. I did not say she was too fond, Belgarde exclaimed. Heaven forbid I should say anything so idiotic. She is not too anything. If I were to say she was ugly, I should not mean she was too ugly. She is fond of pleasing, and if you are pleased, she is grateful. If you are not pleased, she lets it pass and thinks the worst neither of you nor herself. I imagine, though, she hopes the saints in heaven are, for I am sure she is incapable of trying to please by any means of which they would disapprove. Is she grave or gay? Asked Newman. She is both, not alternatively, for she is always the same. There is gravity and gaiety in her gravity. But there is no reason why she should be particularly gay. Is she unhappy? I won't say that, for unhappiness is according to one takes things, as one takes things. And Claire takes them according to some receipt communicated to her by the Blessed Virgin in a vision. To be unhappy is to be disagreeable, which for her is out of the question. So she has arranged her circumstances so as to be happy in them. She is a philosopher, said Newman. No, she is simply a very nice woman. Her circumstances, at any rate, haven't been disagreeable. Bellegarde hesitated a moment, a thing he very rarely did. Oh, my dear fellow, if I go into the history of my family, I shall give you more than you bargain for. No, on the contrary, I bargain for that, said Newman. We shall have to appoint a special seance, then, beginning early. Suffice it for the present that Claire has not slept on roses. She made at 18 a marriage that was expected to be brilliant, but that turned out like a lamp that goes out all smoke and bad smell. Madame de Cintre was 60 years old, and an odious old gentleman. Monsieur de Cintre was 60 years old, and an odious old gentleman. He lived, however, but a short time, and after his death, his family pounced upon his money, brought a lawsuit against his widow, and pushed things very hard. Their case was a good one, for Monsieur de Cintre, who had been trustee for some of his relatives, appeared to have been guilty of some very irregular practices. In the course of the suit, some revelations were made as to his private history, which my sister found so displeasing that she ceased to defend herself and washed her hands of the property. This required some pluck, for she was between two fires, her husband's family opposing her and her own family forcing her. My mother and my brother wished her to cleave to what they regarded as her rights, but she resisted firmly and at last bought her freedom, obtained my mother's assent to dropping the suit at the price of a promise. What was the promise? To do anything else for the next 10 years that was asked of her. Anything that is but marry. She had disliked her husband very much. No one knows how much. The marriage had been in your horrible French way, Newman continued, made by the two families without her having any voice. It was a chapter for a novel. She saw Monsieur de Cintre for the first time a month before the wedding. After everything to the minutest detail had been arranged, she turned white when she looked at him, and white when she remained till the wedding day. The evening before the ceremony she swooned away, and she spent the whole night in sobs. My mother sat holding her two hands, and my brother walked up and down the room. I declared it was revolting, and told my sister publicly that if she would refuse downright, I would stand by her. I was told to go about my business, and she became Comtesse de Cintre. Your brother, said Newman reflectively, must be a very nice young man. He is very nice, though he is not young. He is upward of 15 years my senior. He has been a father to my sister and me. He is very remarkable. He is a very remarkable man. He has the best manners in France. He is extremely clever indeed. He is very learned. He is writing a history of the Princess of France who never married. This was said by Bellegarde with extreme gravity, looking straight at Newman, with an eye that betokened no mental reservation, or that at least almost betokened none. Newman perhaps discovered there what little there was, for he presently said, "You don't love your brother." "I beg your pardon," said Bellegarde ceremoniously. "Well-bred people always love their brothers." "Well, I don't love him, then," Newman answered. "Wait till you know him," rejoined Bellegarde. And this time he smiled. "Is your mother also very remarkable?" Newman asked, after a pause. "For my mother," said Bellegarde, now with intense gravity, "I have the highest admiration. She is a very extraordinary woman. You cannot approach her without perceiving it. She is the daughter, I believe, of an English nobleman, of the Earl of St. Dunstan's." "Is the Earl of St. Dunstan's a very old family?" So, the 16th century. It is on my father's side that we go back. The family antiquaries themselves lose breath. At last they stop, panting and fanning themselves, somewhere in the 9th century, under Charlemagne. That is where we begin. "There's no mistake about it," said Newman. "I'm sure, I hope not. We have been mistaken at least for several centuries." "And you have always married into old families?" as a rule, though in so long a stretch of time there have been some exceptions. Three or four Bellegardes in the 17th and 18th centuries took wives out of the bourgeoisie, married lawyers' daughters. A lawyer's daughter, that's very bad, is it? Asked Newman. Horrible. One of us in the Middle Ages did better. He married a beggar maid, like King Cophetua. That was really better. It was like marrying a bird or a monkey. One didn't have to think about her family at all. Our women have always done well. They have never gone into the petite noblesse. There is, I believe, not a case on record of a misalliance among the women. Newman turned this over for a while, and then at last he said, "You offered, the first time you came to see me, to render me any service you could. I told you that sometime I would mention something you might do. Do you remember?" "Remember, I've been counting the hours." "Very well, here's your chance. Do what you can to make your sister think well of me." Bellegarde stared with a smile. "Why, I'm sure she thinks as well of you as possible already." "An opinion founded on seeing me three or four times, that is putting me off with very little. I want something more. I have been thinking of it a good deal, and at last I have decided to tell you I should like very much to marry Madame de Cintry." Bellegarde had been looking at him with quickened expectancy, and with the smile with which he had greeted Newman's allusion to his promised request, at this last announcement he continued to gaze, but his smile went through two or three curious phases. It felt apparently a momentary impulse to broaden, but this it immediately checked. Then it remained for some instants, taking counsel with itself, at the end of which it decreed a retreat. It slowly effaced itself and left a look of seriousness, modified by the desire not to be rude. Extreme surprise had come into the Count Valentin's face, but he had reflected that it would be uncivil to leave it there. And yet, what the deuce was he to do with it? He got up in his agitation and stood before the chimney-piece, still looking at Newman. He was a longer time thinking what to say than one would have expected. "If you can't render me the service I ask," said Newman, "I say it out. Say it out." "Let me hear it again distinctly," said Bellegarde. "It's very important, you know. I shall plead your case with my sister, because you want to marry her. That's it, hey?" "Oh, I don't say plead my case exactly. I shall try and do that myself, but say a good word for me now and then. Let her know that you think well of me." At this, Bellegarde gave a little light laugh. "What I want chiefly, after all," Newman went on, "is just to let you know what I have in mind. I suppose that is what you expect, isn't it? I want to do what is customary here. If there is anything particular to be done, let me know and I will do it. I wouldn't for the world approach Madame de Cintry without all the proper forms. If I ought to go and tell your mother, why, I will go and tell her. I will go and tell your brother, even. I will go and tell anyone you please. As I don't know anyone else, I begin by telling you. But that, if it is a social obligation, is a pleasure as well." "Yes, yes, I see," said Bellegarde, lightly stroking his chin. "You have a very right feeling about it, but I am glad you have begun with me." He paused, hesitated, and then turned away and walked slowly the length of the room. Newman got up and stood leaning against the mantel shelf with his hands in his pockets, watching Bellegarde's promenade. The young Frenchman came back and stopped in front of him. "I give it up," he said. "I will not pretend I am not surprised. I am hugely. Oof, it's a relief." "That sort of news is always a surprise," said Newman. "No matter what you have done, people are never prepared. But if you are so surprised, I hope at least you are pleased." "Come," said Bellegarde, "I am going to be tremendously frank. I don't know whether I am pleased or horrified." "If you are pleased, I shall be glad," said Newman, "and I shall be encouraged. If you are horrified, I shall be sorry, but I shall not be discouraged. You must make the best of it." "That is quite right. That is your only possible attitude. You are perfectly serious." "Am I a Frenchman that I should not be?" asked Newman. "But why is it, by the by, that you should be horrified?" Bellegarde raised his hand to the back of his head and rubbed his hair quickly up and down, thrusting out the tip of his tongue as he did so. "Why, you are not noble, for instance," he said. "The devil I am not," exclaimed Newman. "Oh," said Bellegarde a little more seriously, "I do not know you had a title." A title? What do you mean by a title? Asked Newman. A count? A duke? A marquis? I don't know anything about that. I don't know who is and who is not, but I say I am noble. I don't exactly know what you mean by it, but it's a fine word and a fine idea. I put in a claim to it. But what have you to show, my dear fellow? What proofs? Anything you please. But you don't suppose I am going to undertake to prove that I am noble? It is for you to prove the contrary. Not easily done. You have manufactured washtubs. Oh, that's easily done. You have manufactured washtubs. Newman stared a moment. Therefore, I am not noble. I don't see it. Tell me something I have not done, something I cannot do. You cannot marry a woman like Madame de Cintry for the asking. I believe you mean, said Newman slowly, that I am not good enough. Brutally speaking, yes. Bellegarde had hesitated a moment, and while he hesitated, Newman's attentive glance had grown somewhat eager. In answer to these last words, he for a moment said nothing. He simply blushed a little. Then he raised his eyes to the ceiling and stood looking at one of the rosy cherubs that was painted upon it. Of course I don't expect to marry any woman for the asking, he said at last. I expect first to make myself acceptable to her. She must like me, to begin with. But that I am not good enough to make a trail is rather a surprise. A trial is rather a surprise. Bellegarde wore a look of mingled perplexity, sympathy, and amusement. You should not hesitate, then, to go up tomorrow and ask a duchess to marry you. Not if I thought she would suit me. But I am very fastidious. She might not at all. Bellegarde's amusement began to prevail. And you should be surprised if she refused you. Newman hesitated a moment. It sounds conceited to say yes, but nevertheless I think I should, for I should make a very handsome offer. What would it be? Everything she wishes. If I get hold of a woman that comes up to my standard, I shall think nothing too good of for her. I have been a long time looking, and I find such women rare. To combine the qualities I require seems to be difficult, but when the difficulty is vanquished, it deserves a reward. My wife shall have a good position, and I am not afraid to say that I shall be a good husband. And these qualities that you require, what are they? Goodness, beauty, intelligence, a fine education, personal elegance, everything in a world that makes a splendid woman. And noble birth, evidently, said Bellegarde. Oh, throw that in by all means. If it's there, the more the better. And my sister seems to you to have all these things. She is exactly what I have been looking for. She is my dream realized. And you would make her a very good husband? That is what I wanted you to tell her. Bellegarde laid his hand on his companion's arm a moment, looked at him with his head on the one side, from head to foot, and then, with a loud laugh and shaking the other hand in the air, turned away. He walked again the length of the room, and again he came back and stationed himself in front of Newman. All this is very interesting. It is very curious. In what I said just now, I was speaking not for myself, but for my tradition, my superstitions. For myself, really, your proposal tickles me. It startled me at first, but the more I think of it, the more I see in it. It's no use attempting to explain anything. You won't understand me. After all, I don't see why you need. It's no great loss. Oh, if there is anything more to explain, try it. I want to proceed with my eyes open. I will do my best to understand. No, said Bellegarde. It's disagreeable to me. I give it up. I liked you the first time I saw you, and I'll abide by that. It would be quite odious for me to come talking to you as if I could patronize you. I have told you before that I envy you. Vous imposez, as we say. I didn't know you much until within 5 minutes, so we will let things go, and I will say nothing to you that if our positions were reversed, you would not say to me. I do not know whether, in renouncing the mysterious opportunity to which he alluded, Bellegarde felt that he was doing something very generous. If so, he was not rewarded, his generosity was not appreciated. Newman quite failed to recognize the young Frenchman's power to wound his feelings, and he had now no sense of escaping or coming off easily. He did not thank his companion even with a glance. My eyes are open, though, he said. So far as that, you will have practically told me that your family and your friends will turn up their noses at me. I have never thought much about the reasons that make it proper for people to turn up their noses. And so I can only decide the question offhand. Looking at it in that way, I can't see anything in it. I simply think, if you want to know, that I am as good as the best. Who the best are, I don't pretend to say. I have never thought much about that either. To tell the truth, I have always had rather a good opinion of myself. A man who is successful but who is successful can't help it. But I will admit that I was conceited. What I don't say yes to is that I don't stand high as anyone else. This is a line of speculation I should not have chosen, but you must remember you began it yourself. I should have never dreamed that I was on the defensive or that I had to justify myself, but if your people will have it so, I will do my best. But you offered a while ago to make your court, as we say, to my mother and my brother. Damn it, cried Newman, I want to be polite. Good, rejoined Bellegarde. This will go far, it will be very entertaining. Excuse my speaking of it in that cold-blooded fashion, but the matter must of necessity be for me something of a spectacle. It's positively exciting, but apart from that I sympathize with you, and I shall be actor, so far as I can, as well as spectator. You are a capital fellow, I believe in you, and I back you. The simple fact that you appreciate my sister will serve as the proof I was asking for. All men are equal, especially men of taste. Do you think, asked Newman presently, that Madame de Cintry is determined not to marry? That is my impression, but that is not against you. It's for you to make her change her mind. I'm afraid it will be hard, said Newman gravely. I don't think it will be easy. In a general way, I don't see why a widow should ever marry again. She has gained the benefits of matrimony, freedom, and consideration, and she has got rid of the drawbacks. Why should she put her head into the noose again? Her usual motive is ambition. If a man can offer her a great position to make her a princess or an ambassadress, she may think the compensation sufficient. And in that way, is Madame de Cintry ambitious? Who knows, said Bellegarde, with a profound shrug. I don't pretend to say that she is or all that she is not. I don't pretend to say all that she is or all that she is not. I think she might be touched by the prospect of becoming the wife of a great man. But in a certain way, I believe whatever she does will be the improbable. Don't be too confident, but don't absolutely doubt. Your best chance for success will be precisely in being, to her mind, unusual, unexpected, original. Don't try to be anyone else. Be simply yourself, out and out. Something or other can't fail to come of it. I'm very curious to see what. I am much obliged to you for your advice, said Newman. And, he added with a smile, I am glad for your sake I am going to be so amusing. It will be more than amusing, said Bellegarde. Oh, excuse me. It will be inspiring. I look at it from my point of view and you from yours. After all, anything for a change. And only yesterday I was yawning so as to dislocate my jaw, and declaring that there was nothing new under the sun. If it isn't new to see you come into the family as a suitor, I am very much mistaken. Let me say that, my dear fellow, I won't call it anything else, good or bad. I will simply call it new. And overcome with a sense of the novelty thus foreshadowed, Valentin de Bellegarde threw himself into a deep armchair before the fire, and with a fixed, intense smile seemed to read a vision of it in the flame of the logs. After a while he looked up. Go ahead, my boy. You have my good wishes, he said. But it is really a pity you don't understand me, that you don't know just what I am doing. Oh, said Newman, laughing, don't do anything wrong. Leave me to myself, rather, or defy me, out and out. I wouldn't lay any load on your conscience. Bellegarde sprang up again. He was evidently excited. There was a warmer spark than ever usual in his eye. You never will understand. You never will know, he said. And if you succeed, and I am out to help, and I turn out to have helped you, you will never be grateful, not as I shall deserve you should be. You will be an excellent fellow always, but you will not be grateful. But it doesn't matter, for I shall get my own fun out of it. And he broke into an extravagant laugh. You look puzzled, he added. You look almost frightened. It is a pity, said Newman, that I don't understand you. I shall lose some very good jokes. I told you, you remember, that we are very strange people, Bellegarde went on. I give you warning again, we are. My mother is strange, my brother is strange, and I verily believe that I am stranger than either. You will even find my sister a little strange. Old trees have crooked branches, old houses have queer cracks, old races have odd secrets. Remember that we are 800 years old. Very good, said Newman. That's the sort of thing I came to Europe for. you come into my program. Touche la, then, said Bellegarde, putting on out his hand. It's a bargain. I accept you. I espouse your cause. It's because I like you. It's a great measure. But that is not the only reason. And he stood holding Newman's hand and looking at him askance. What is the other one? I am in the opposition. I dislike someone else. Your brother? Asked Newman in his unmodulated voice. Bellegarde laid his fingers upon his lips with a whispered hush. Old races have strange secrets, he said. Put yourself into motion. Come and see my sister and be assured of my sympathy. And on this he took his leave. Newman dropped into a chair before his fire and sat a long time staring into the blaze. Alrighty. There's another chapter done. Newman sort of has Bellegarde's blessing. Although Bellegarde doesn't have that much confidence in him, he does like him and kind of gives him permission to give it a try with his sister. Interesting stuff. Alright, have your say about this chapter over at the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow.